Welcome to Under the Influence, a podcast for navigating the complex world of disinformation, social media influence campaigns, information integrity, journalism, and the media.
Every year on the 3rd of May, we celebrate Press Freedom Day. It is a date which celebrates the fundamental principles of press freedom. We evaluate press freedom around the world, defend the media from attacks on their independence, and to pay tribute to journalists who have lost their lives in the exercise of their profession. This day reminds us of the importance of an inclusive, participatory democracy where the press can hold power to account and serve the interests of the public. At a time where we see the rise of disinformation globally, attacks on journalists and threats to freedom of expression, not only in the global south but also in established democracies, the role of a free, independent and fearless press and access of the public to information is of utmost importance. But while physical and verbal attacks on journalists worldwide remain a major threat, there are also other threats that may not make headlines but are more subtle and nevertheless pose a constant and slow erosion of press freedom. This year, Reporters Without Borders released their annual Press Freedom Index with a note that the economic indicator sends the most alarming signal. By focusing on the growing economic fragility of journalism, Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index this year has already drawn significant media and political attention because it shows the effects of economic pressure and political hostility towards the press that they say is increasingly frightening. In Africa, the media are also experiencing these pressures. And this is why we decided to devote some attention to questions of media sustainability and how the struggle for sustainability impacts on press freedom, independence, and ultimately the information integrity of the ecosystem. Today, we are joined by Ruth Moon from Louisiana State University, who's done research on international media assistance programs, and Khadija Patel from the International Fund for Public Interest Media. Welcome, Ruth and Khadija. Both of you have interest in question of media development. And Ruth, you've done research on this. Khadija, you as a former journalist and also currently working for an agency that helps fund this journalism. A major development in recent months has that since Donald Trump's assumption of the U.S. presidency, we've seen termination of funding for international development, like USAID, slashing of funding to the National Endowment for Democracy. This is something that has been of concern, and you know, if I wonder if you would be able to talk a little bit about how big an impact you think that specific termination of funding or the reduction of funding might have on the media development landscape in Africa.
The U.S. has been the main global supporter of media development funding from like an international government perspective. So that's a big loss just in terms of numbers. Like, it has been the biggest and now it's gone. And it also, though, leaves an interesting gap that could be filled by a lot of other potential donors and different models. So it opens the door for something interesting, but it also is a huge loss, I think, from my perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of, you know, calculating the effect of it, I think that it is as big a shock to the system as COVID-19, the lockdowns, as an economic shock. It is as big as that. Perhaps some are arguing that it's bigger. And certainly because it was quite abrupt, it was unexpected, the scale of it was certainly, you know, the fact that, you know, there were the stop orders, you know, that, you know, was the fact that current grants were seized, that took many, many people by surprise. My own organization was affected as well. The U.S. has been our biggest donor. President Biden pledged up to $30 million at the first Summit for Democracies during the first year of his presidency. And so we have also been grappling with it in that, you know, we are more fortunate in that we have a raft of funders. We have more than 20 funders. So we're not, you know, we're not at risk of shutting down imminently because of the withdrawal and, you know, the stop order, the stop work order. But, you know, we have had to make decisions because of this, and, you know, we've had to pause some hiring, you know, reevaluated our grant spend for this year. You know, just fortunately, we're not stopping grant making for this year, but it does mean that we've had to kind of reevaluate, you know, and, you know, adjust the budgets accordingly. So even my, you know, my organization as a multilateral fund is impacted. But then when you think about, you know, at an organizational level, we know that in South Africa, there's an organization who signed a grant agreement with USAID in December for investigative reporting. And it was quite a hefty sum. And they'd gone through almost, I think, 6 months to a year of applying for this particular grant. And we're really, you know, hoping to, you know, to shore up their operations with this grant. And, you know, this is now basically disappeared, significantly weakened their potential to do investigative journalism, because in their planning, they had counted this grant. And this is in South Africa. And I think that the impact of this is already being seen with the departure of many senior journalists, investigative journalists, to the corporate sector, for example. And we're likely to see that elsewhere, you know. But of course, there's USAID. There's also NED, as you mentioned. NED has been, you know, far more of a prolific direct funder of media in Africa, where I think that a lot of the programs that USAID have done, you know, came in the guise of like Internews. You know, Internews, of course, is a large media development agency supported by USAID, you know, who've done a lot of programming around, for example, gender or corruption, etc., bringing together journalists from across Southern Africa, you know, around certain thematic priorities. So you're likely to see a lot of that now. You know, obviously all of that has disappeared. You know, a lot of the, you know, kind of like the people, because, you know, I know a lot of kind of media development practitioners in Southern Africa who were tied to these programs in one way or the other. Of course, they're now out of work, and there really isn't, you know, there isn't much other work for them to be doing, you know, when they were facilitators of these types of programs. But like I said, NED has been a more prolific direct donor. And over the last, I think I would say over the last 5 years at least, you know, have, you know, representatives of NED have traveled to Africa to find media to work with. And, you know, and this is them coming to us and saying, we can support you. And so, and many of the media institutions, their support are quite a lot smaller. Some of them at startup level, where they have been the single biggest donor. And that has had catastrophic consequences, especially because, you know, the way, you know, where this type of funding works, you report for, you know, for money spent. And so, you know, and then you're waiting for the money. A lot of these institutions have spent up this money awaiting the checks. So, you know, it's not just about what's coming up down the line. And so you're basically, you know, you plunge into a cash flow crisis. So it has certainly put the brakes on a lot of expansion, innovation. A lot of these types of institutions are just trying to figure out, how do we just ensure that we're able to keep the core operation running? And, you know, and they're all trying to figure out new models, trying to, you know, find other donors. But this is a very, very difficult environment. And I think that the shock of this decision comes when, you know, there aren't that many others stepping up directly, right? China, of course, spends a significant amount on media in Africa, but they don't do the USAID type of funding, right? They either take equity in organizations like they do in independent media here in South Africa, or they provide content through wire service, etc., which is quite popular as well. And then, you know, Russia has, you know, its own ways, and there isn't, you know, increasingly people are talking about Turkey and the Gulf states, you know, coming in and showing some influence. And I think perhaps, you know, certainly in some parts of East Africa, you know, in the likes of Somalia, etc., you can see the Gulf states playing a lot bigger role. But The truth is that there aren't that many others stepping up. You know, there are a few MENA development organizations like FPU, who come, FP Press Unlimited, who come from the Netherlands, IMS, International Media Support, who come from Denmark, who actually have, you know, global presence. But even within their global presence, they don't all work everywhere, you know. And for example, many of them don't work in South Africa, don't have current programs in South Africa. Deutsche Welle Academy from Germany, close ties to the German government, of course. It's basically the media development arm of Deutsche Welle, which is a public broadcaster. They work extensively in Namibia because of, you know, the German connection there, have no programs in South Africa. You know, the impact of people now having to reevaluate where they work against the backdrop of declining budgets for all of these organizations as well, because already their governments have been cutting aid budgets, and what we're seeing coming out of the EU recently is, you know, and the UK for that matter, you know, slashing of aid budgets. All of these organizations were basically mediators of aid, and instead shoring up defense budgets. So the potential for, you know, for another donor, at least with in the guise of USAID right now, I think I certainly, not at the scale of USAID, I'm yet to see anybody at least put up their hand and say they'll do it.
Yeah, you mentioned, I think, of other countries opens the question around what funding also does in terms of soft power. We know that funding is not, it's not charity, right? It's not just giving away money. It's also usually aimed at developing at least some value systems, sometimes more direct geopolitical interests. And so the first question I have around this is for you, Ruth. You talked about in your research, you've looked at different training models, different value systems, normative models that have in the past also been imparted as part of this development work. You know, traditionally this has been Western aid and development assistance for media has come with a specific model of maybe a Western type of training. Now that there might be a sort of demise of that, do you think that we'll see some other models emerging, whether they are from Russia or China, or whether they are more locally, maybe more contextual? Or a different question to ask this maybe is also, what is the role of African states? If you talk about a vacuum or a gap being created, what is the chance that African states might step into this gap, mm-hmm. and then become more controlling of media in Africa that's already vulnerable, yeah. to oppression?
Past research on media development has found that it tends to be implemented in ways that reflect the donor countries' own media systems. So, you know, USAID, a lot of USAID programming, for instance, would reflect sort of U.S. values and what people assume is good journalism based on, you know, where they're coming from. And my own research on these programs has not uncovered very many training programs run by people who are from the country that they're training in. So it means that people are importing values from other places and trying to use their own background from a different country to then teach journalists in a particular place how to do better at their job. And I think there's a lot of space for this to get closer to home. And I've already, the data that I've been looking at from USAID and the US Agency for Global Media already suggests that South Africa has been kind of a regional power in hosting some of these programs and in providing people who then go on to train in other countries. And I think there's it's a really interesting space for like global South powers, especially like maybe, you know, South Africa and other BRICS countries, perhaps to like step into training their neighbors in how to do journalism in one way or another. And that's a really cool possibility, I think, with this space, this new space and funding. It opens questions, I guess, of like well, USAID funding has traditionally been linked to democracy. So the funding is provided because the US government thinks that free press leads to or is linked to democratization in one way or another. but there's not a lot of good research on how that works exactly, or like what that, you know, what that chain of connection is.
Trickle down.
So I think there's like a whole lot of space to explore, like, what exactly is it about journalism that can lead to a stronger democracy, and how do we cultivate that? And, you know, it probably looks different in every place. So, like, what is good journalism in a specific context that will encourage and enhance democracy in that specific place? I think that's a really cool, like, ideal media funding would really focus on that, I think.
How do you see your organization, Khadija, in this context in terms of the support for democracy, support for a type of media that holds power to account, and all of these issues? I think that, you know, traditionally one would associate with a certain type of media for development. Do you see that this is something, a priority for you, in terms of that ideal, that normative ideal?
So I guess in that sense, our organization is a little different, right? In that it is an organization that has been built around the idea of this crisis, around the idea of this of media extinction. So the, you know, while it has the ideals of democracy, and, you know, and everything that comes with that, that is almost the unintended consequences, right, of this. So, you know, we can talk to that, but what we're actually trying to show is that direct funding to media organizations, direct core funding to media organizations, builds their resilience in the short to medium term, while systemic change efforts can be unwound. Right?
So in some ways, you're like the opposite of USAID, because USAID cares about democracy.
Yeah.
And you are really focused on like strengthening journalism.
Yeah.
And then
Exactly. Exactly. So yes, yeah, so, I mean, like, obviously, you know, we within our theory of change, yes, we understand media, our idea of media is informed by its role in democracies, etc. That is the, you know, the philosophical, but that's not our primary role. Like, we're not here preaching democracy. We're here to ensure that there are healthy media ecosystems in the places that we work, and a healthy media ecosystem does lead to better democracies, stronger democracies. You know, that can work, but for us, that's not our focus. Our focus really is in ensuring that, you know, that information is a public good, and that, you know, that it gets realized through that. The thing is that, you know, different donors are persuaded by different things, right? So, you know, the US, democracy is big for them. You know, for another donor,
it has been.
Oh, yeah. Historically. It's not a current priority. In practice or otherwise. But, you know, other donors may be made persuaded by other things. And I think that it's really interesting right now that there's mostly coming out of the EU, but it resonates with what's happening. Mostly coming out of the UK, but resonates with what's happening in the EU. This idea of epistemic security. And so in the face of, you know, disinformation and especially state-sponsored disinformation campaign, what is increasingly being understood is that this actually has a security threat for these countries, and so they're trying to figure out how does strengthening media actually help. So I was fascinated recently, I was at a conference, and I can't mention the country because we were under Chatham rules there, but basically a scholar of disinformation is currently writing a security policy for a European country, which tells you a lot about where that, you know, where that thinking is going. So, you know, at different points in time, you know, media serve different priorities for different governments. It's fascinating, and, you know, I mean, there's perhaps a whole other podcast we can do about this notion of epistemic security, especially for what it means for us in the global south. I really think we need to unpack it quite a bit. But, you know, we're in the unfortunate position of being in a replenishment campaign this year, right? So the multilateral fund, just like other multilateral funds, like you know, like the Global Fund, or you know, the Vaccine Alliance, there are cycles. There's, you know, programmatic cycles, which are then followed by a replenishment campaign. So basically, we're fundraising. So we're in this crazy moment right now, fundraising in the midst of all of this, trying to raise $150 million between now and November. So you know, and it's at once encouraging in that there is certainly a realization by some that, you know, we've got to step up, but it's not actually realized in the budgets allocated, right? So there is a worry, I would say. There is a concern about what, you know, what does this mean for media support more generally? But I think, you know, I'm still confident that that idea of multilateralism actually could indeed be reinvigorated in this moment. That we're seeing the danger of what one hegemon's changing priorities, you know, the havoc that that can have, that actually, you know, to reassert multilateralism, to think about partnership, collaboration, and to, you know, to meet the world's challenges in this way. So, and we're built as a multilateral mechanism. We have a council, you know, where states have seats, you know, so it is a properly, so we're not like media development, you know, we're not like a private foundation. So I think that what certainly we're hoping, we're optimistic at many of the donors that we're speaking to, you realize the, you know, the gravity of the issue. The thing is that in the midst of all of this, conditions on the ground are worsening for various reasons. I mean, just last week I was looking at, you know, some paperwork that we were processing for an organization in Tunisia. And it was really depressing for me because, you know, Tunisia was that icon of the Arab Spring. You know, press freedom suddenly realized, at the, you know, in the midst of a brutal regime, like the Ben Ali regime was brutal, and then there was press freedom, it was amazing. And there was this flourishing of independent media. And there was this particular organization who actually came out of being a blog, a collective blog, and they then institutionalized themselves and became this fantastic national media organization. And, you know, if anything, it was the realization of the democratic potential of digital technologies, right? Like, that's what we said, this is how digital technologies was going to... And today, the founders are all in exile, the journalists are in and out of jail, and press freedom barely exists in Tunisia, right? So, you know, conditions, you know, whether it's the economic conditions or the political conditions in many countries in the world are not favorable. So, you know, thinking about how we tackle this issue, you know, I think really does require us to lean on institutions, to lean on governments, to think less selfishly and think really about the greater global good.
So maybe in closing, ask, you mentioned the greater global good. You also mentioned the threat of disinformation, which we know is a major threat. If we were to maybe flip this around and try to take a positive spin on this, what sort of opportunities do you think, or maybe shall we say priorities, if media funding of media clearly and media sustainability is one, what sort of partnerships do you think should be emerging at the moment? What sort of networks of solidarity should be emerging if we talk about information integrity as not only of interest to the media and to public, but also national security of countries, all of these priorities, where do you think should the focus fall?
Well, I think one thing that several people highlighted today is the value of having funding that's very broad and lets you accomplish a lot of things, do different programs, and it, that's in tension with a lot of often what donors would like to fund, which is very specific, concrete, deliverable, you know, projects with tangible outcomes. So cultivating a funding community, whether that's governments, a combination of governments and nonprofits, or some magical combination that we haven't discovered yet. Cultivating Kajia's organization, like, and getting the funding for this kind of programmatic focus that can have long-term effects without the stress of providing the short-term, like, tangible outcomes that the donors want, Like, that's that would be great. And how to get there, I don't know. But I do know that the USAID programs that I've already been looking at from like the past 20 years, a lot of their programming is very focused on individual journalists and cultivating the individual journalist as a solution to really what is a structural problem. And I think that just doesn't. I don't think that will work. Like, I don't think it has worked. I don't think it could work in the future. And I think there's a different, you know, we need some different solutions, at least to add on to that, maybe to take the place of that.
Yeah, I agree entirely. This is a structural problem. It needs structural intervention. You know, what I can say is, so from our early impact data, more than 50% of the organizations that we have given core support to, so we do core funding, we don't do program, so we do more than 50% of the organizations that we've given core funding to have been able to actually raise non-grant revenue. So what we're seeing then is that being giving organizations just some leeway, our grants, you know, our average grant size is $200,000 over 2 years. So they're not, you know, they're not millions of dollars per organization, but giving them some leeway, just taking away, you know, some stress, allows them the freedom then to either build new products or build new revenue streams that ultimately lead to sustainability. What I hope is that this moment allows us to actually take that stress away. The truth is that we're not going to be able to save every organization, and that's unfortunate, but we're going to lose many organizations over the next, especially 2 years. What we have to ensure is that the audiences that those organizations serve continue to be able to receive information. So I think that it takes a lot of strategic thinking on the part of funders, on the part of financiers, to think about how do those audiences not go without quality information. And I think that is the opportunity that we have here right now, is to prioritize that. You know, we think about, you know, organizations having to prioritize audiences, but I think that even at, you know, on the level of funding, we also need to think about audiences and let that guide our decisions. And I hope that this moment allows us to do that. You know, I think that you know, there are many, many good things that USAID funding has allowed around the world. And of course, we're all very deeply appreciative for all of that. But perhaps, you know, this does herald a new era as well, and allows us also to reimagine media support in new ways.
So, like, think beyond the development model to something else?
Exactly, exactly.
So some new way of thinking about how one assists and develops media in a way that might have some component of grant funding, but that develops into something else. Well, thank you both. Thank you to Ruth Moon from Louisiana State University and Khadija Patel from the International Fund for Public Interest Media for your participation today and for your thoughts.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you.